where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Go.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jim Lawler on the board. We have a, I'm looking here at the, Jimmy Wayne sends this picture of a contrast of two people. There's a picture of Nixon's dog Checker's grave. It's got a big headstone and everything. There's a picture of Trump's first wife's grave, like on, is that, where is that, on his golf course or Mar-a-Lago, so he could call it a cemetery or something?
It's in Bedminster, yes, on the golf course.
It's not near as kept up. It's the dog's grave. Jesus. Yeah, whatever. I can't even, it's hard for me to even go anywhere down this road with these people, but Nixon, I think, was in some ways and actually a pretty decent guy. He just had some issues. I don't think there's any question which... You think Trump would ever have been a Quaker? You think, Quakers have some morals, don't they?
Oh, yeah. They're the ones that, they... I think they proved their morality during World War One and Two in serving in roles, in medical roles. So, yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures are down 23, NASDAQ futures down 223. We have the interesting stuff this weekend, but I don't know if this stuff is just to drive people away from other issues, just give an issue today to complain about, basically. But this issue with the aircraft carrier being renamed, is that just something to get us away from Epstein and the other stuff? I can't even imagine that. And for those that don't know what the hell I'm talking about, the first of the new class of the new Ford, Gerald Ford class of aircraft carriers, they always blame name the class after the first ship. That was the one that has been at sea. It's the newer one with the, with a different deal. They're not steam catapults. They're electric.
Can you hear me, Tommy?
Yeah. The second one in that class is the John F. Kennedy, which is now undergoing sea trials. The third one was supposed to be the Doris Miller. And, of course, everybody's going to say, how's Doris Miller? Which you probably shouldn't say that, but Doris Miller was a guy, not a lady, a guy who was in the Navy in World War II at Pearl Harbor. And he was African-American, went through the training and all that stuff, and evidently he knew how to use, machine guns and anti-aircraft guns and stuff, but because he was black, they made him a cook because they didn't want, the other non-white people manning, the guns and stuff. So his ship was bombed. I forget which battleship he was on. Ship was bombed during Pearl Harbor. He flies up from the downstairs because it was flooding or whatever, and he sees one of the anti-aircraft guns unmanned. I don't think I was dead or what. So he grabs it, and he's actually very good at it, and he shoots down four planes.
He was on the West Virginia, by the way.
Okay, West Virginia. He shoots down four planes. And then he proceeds to go on from there, and I don't know, did he die at sea or something? Anyway, he was on some ship where he got killed. So it's pretty much a pretty serious patriotism thing, or as they say, as Adam Cartwright once said, most acts of heroism are really acts of quiet desperation, right? But still, the dude went out, he shot down four planes, reacted just like he was supposed to, went out and finished his tour to the fact that he got died there. So the Navy decided to name an aircraft carrier after this guy, sort of to honor all enlisted men and everything else, because up till now, they've always been named from admirals or other people. So I thought it was a pretty darn good idea. Well, of course, now Trump and Hegseth have decided, well, wait a minute, we don't want some basically black guy's name on aircraft carrier, when we could put Trump's name on there. So now the investigation is, can they name change the name of the ship from the Doris Miller to the Donald Trump while he's still alive, which you're not supposed to do either, and maybe put Doris Miller on some like barge later or something, or destroyer maybe. And I'm thinking, you know, how do these guys...
It's ridiculous.
How do they have time to think this stuff up, John?
Yeah, I mean, and so I think you're right. It's flooding the zone. I mean, so he died in 43 on the USS Liscombe Bay, a real hero.
Were those guys sunk, or did he just was one of the people who got shot on air raid or something?
It doesn't say here. He was an escort carrier torpedoed by submarines. And also, it was the loss of 702 officers and sailors, the deadliest sinking of a carrier in the history of the United States Navy. And this is in 43.
Was that in the Atlantic, or was he in the Pacific? Probably still.
Gilbert Islands.
Or for those that don't know, these escort carriers, there were regular carriers, for lack of a better term, the Essex class and the other class. Then they had a bunch of ships they were essentially making... They're going to make cruisers out of them, right, John? And then they said, okay, we need more aircraft carriers. And they were not anywhere near as armored as, like, the Enterprise and the Essex class and that stuff. But they had enough planes on there where they could do, you know, coverage. You wouldn't be the ones you'd want to go into a huge battle with, like Midway. But they were able to do, you know, coverage of some stuff and anti-sam submarine warfare and stuff. But they were essentially light carriers, right, the escort carriers. They used a lot of them in the Atlantic to try and find submarines for convoys, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The escort carriers, they were the fleet carriers.
Those are the ones I'm talking about, the real carriers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Enterprise, the Lexington, the rest of those, they were designed for fast fleet action. The escort carriers were designed really, for... convoy duty to take the pressure off. You didn't want to have, the carriers were the equivalent of the battleships by that time. You didn't want to have your heavy, your best ship escorting, a convoy of 10 cargo ships coming over. I mean, we won the war through logistics, so it was a brilliant move on the Navy's part to do something like that.
For what they were used, the escort carrier or the escort aircraft carrier, also called a jeep carrier or a baby flat top in the United States Navy, or it was called a Woolworth carrier. How's that? Remember J.W. Woolworth by the Royal Navy? Small and slower type of aircraft carrier used by the Royal Navy, blah, blah, blah. They were typically half the length and a third of the displacement, more lightly armed and armored and carried fewer planes. They're most often built upon a commercial ship hull. So they were cheaper and could be built quickly. This was their principal advantage. They completed greater numbers. Out of like 100 and some carriers that we allegedly built in World War II, like 80 of them were these things.
Oh, yeah. For example, if you were talking about the carriers that were supporting, invasion of the Philippines, you had this big Lady Gulf battle that we almost got, we were really, Halsey really screwed up. And left the landing force basically undefended. They were all jeep carriers. They were all, these were all escort carriers to provide support for the landing force. And then the Japanese snuck in, and it's quite a story of them turning out and having the destroyer escorts go attack the battleships and the heavy cruisers that came through the pass. But people should read up on that one. It was a good one.
Of the 151 aircraft carriers built in the U.S. during World War II, 122 were escort carriers. There, no examples survive. How's that?
But going back to your original point, I mean, how dare we take a man that showed his mettle, is an example to all of us, died in combat, and try to rename it to a sitting president.
We just got a text that said it's not been official yet, so we're ahead of our skis. Well, the fact is, it got out there. I mean, it
got out there. Yeah,
it's at least enough to, you know, get people think not talking about something else. So it's at least at that stage. But anyway, I mean, there's, you know, I don't know why. Whatever. So are you heading back to the Far East? What are you doing?
I'm going to go back. I belong to a Masonic lodge out there. The Masonic lodges are very different in Asia than they are here.
I'm being fact-checked on the air. We never fact-check our president, but I get fact-checked all the time. Okay. Well, that's all right. And,
I'm going back on the 1st for about 10 days because we have, you know, we're having a new Heather Lodge was elected and be installed. And it's a big event. You know, we all have 100 people there, 125 people at dinner. And, you know, this is off subject here, but, you know, I was very active in Masonic Lodge in Singapore, but it's a, you know, Singapore's Southeast Asia is very different. You know, everybody by definition is, I mean, I would say out of the 100 people in the lodge, you know, 35 to 40 are Singaporean, which then means that they can be Muslim, they can be Indian, they can be Chinese, they can be white. And then you have expats, that the rest of it. So it's an extremely multicultural and multi-religious organization, at least in Asia. Here, you know, it's had issues. So that's what I'm going back for.
What is the story with it here? Is it even still around?
Well, I mean, you're that comment is very valid.
One of our former contributors to the show made it to like level 5. Explain how this thing all works. He made it to like a level 5, then he quit.
Oh, it's a very intricate. I mean, it's basically an organization. I mean, as much as they claim, it was, you know, it's thousands of years old. It was really formed during the Enlightenment, 1600s, 1500s, and the Masonic lodges. You know, they had a legacy of they had separate, you know, African American and white lodges. So, you know, it's it doesn't have. I mean, for example, when I go to a lodge meeting, I wear a tuxedo.
But I mean, who are they supposed to be? What, I mean, here it morphed into somewhat of a charitable organization. But what did it start out
as? It's the same. It's the same.
All right, but now it is. But what was it then?
It was a fraternal organization. It was always supposed to be a charitable organization. It was always supposed to be one. You know, the old adage was make good men better type. I mean, but it's supposed to be a charitable organization. It's a very, you know, I'm a master mason. When I was promoted up, I made a speech. I said, this is the best, this is the most perfect group of imperfect men I could imagine, and it's just people that are trying to do work in the community. That's what we really do. I mean, I can't tell you, in Asia we were always going up to some place, and either, I mean, you'd be surprised, in Singapore there was a lot of elderly that when we would have free meals, the place was packed, and this is in Singapore. Then you go to Cambodia, you go to Thailand, you go to some of these other countries. Yeah, we fed a lot of children.
Well, because here the other were a golf course. My dad, I don't know what that's all about, but there's the Shriner Temple, but there's also a Shriner's Children's Hospital, right? And
so that part must really be respected. People don't understand. Well, maybe they do. The Shriner Hospitals, there's one, I think, in every state, and they are completely free. So
they're not, the one down St. Jude's is enough. They're not tied up with the Shriners at all, right? The Stanley Time.
And so the Shriner hospitals are completely free children's hospitals, and I mean, I used to make fun of those guys with their little, you know, with the funny hats and the
small
go karts.
Yeah,
the go karts they have. But boy, they do work for children that it should be really applauded.
It's just children's hospital. It's not children's cancer. It's just everything, right? But how big is the group here? I don't know if they have the parade. They don't have the circus anymore.
No, I don't know. I try to get involved here locally when I moved back. It didn't quite work. I mean, I just never got much of a response. You know,
they knock you down to level 2 from level 8 or what?
No, I'm a master mason, so that, you know,
what does that mean?
With an English constitution. So there's English. It's also a very decentralized organization. There's no Masonic organization. I mean, there's always scandals in Europe, especially of these illegal Masonic entities. And in Italy, it was very prevalent. I mean, in France, they just caught one that called itself a Masonic Lodge, and it was a bunch of police and intelligence agents that were doing criminal activities. I mean,
Mr. James and I were at this big shindig at the Dark House, this German thing here, and one of the... Who were those guys, Jim? That we they have a room there where the people brought all their stuff from God knows where, and it's some kind of a... It's not Masonic, but it's some society where guys still dressed up, and in there are all these swords and all kinds of stuff. And
The medieval, like... It looked like...
The Templars,
a room out of a Vincent Price horror movie. But no, they come in and they are a society. They read poetry or something like that.
In front of all the swords.
Yes, in front of the swords. And they had, like, you know, a cage where you used to put a prisoner and stuff. It looked literally out of a Vincent Price horror movie.
Well, the table and the chairs are from, like, the 1200s, aren't they?
I believe they're copies, but yeah.
I think they were moved here from Germany. That was a story. Remember, Audrey picked up she's going to be on later, picked up one of the swords and almost knocked something off the thing. I put that down.
So, Tom, Jimmy, what do you think of our latest trade deal with Canada?
This is unbelievable.
The one that we don't have.
Incredible. We had a deal, and again, this is typical Trump, New York, real estate. I had a deal, it's going on, and then the last minute I pull it out. And now Canada is willing to go toe-to-toe.
They're probably not willing, but they're going to.
They're going to. And now he's scrambling again because he doesn't understand the give and take of politics. He understands bullying, and that's what it is. He's trying to bully the Canadians.
Well, he's dealing with... we're starting from the idea that he has a certain percentage of the people in the country here that think he's totally buffooned into thinking that a tariff is a tax on the other guy. And yet, obviously, it's a tax on you. when you get this sort of belief, I mean, I'll tell you what, I've learned so much from Trump in terms of what the American people really are like. That I you know, it's stuff I probably never wanted to learn, but I've learned how many people in this country are actually prejudiced. And I've learned how many people in the country are willing to believe any kind of crap if he's your guy. Now, I would vote tomorrow for a moderate Republican if one was around, so it's not like it's right or left, but it's this current right or left that we see that is so out there on both the right and the left. But the idea, I mean, the average American spends $1,500 a year on Canadian goods. The average Canadian spends $9,000 on American goods. So how exactly are we getting screwed?
Well, I wanted to talk about this. Go to Brazil, it's even worse. We actually have a trade surplus with them. But since, you know, Bolsonaro, I think is his name, he was really... He tried to usurp the election and the Brazilian election. And so he got put in jail, but his son is lobbying. His son has obviously got the cash and was lobbying Don Jr. And so, you know, he went after them. I mean, why are we even involved in these, in another country's politics? Why are we even, I mean, it's these, you know, they actually have a free and fair election. It's just ridiculous.
I don't know what. We have somebody who seems to think they're in charge of everything. I mean, there's nothing that he's not into, you know, be it rules, be it soccer, be it whatever it is. I mean, I don't know if it's the people around him. I can't imagine one person being that busy, but somebody is. I mean, I don't.
The other thing too, you know, going back to your comment about you've learned so much, so have I. I was just thinking before the show, you know, with his persuasion skills. If he was moderate in some areas, think of what he could get done.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, his base, because, but my real point is this, is we have been, you know, everyone's just, everyone needs to make a living. Everyone's doing their job. And I'm going, let's just wind this clock back 150 years, or say 100 years. We basically have elected neoliberal elites, for a lack of a better way to put it. And they felt that, you know, the most obvious example was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. They say nobody felt they were more suited for the presidency than Franklin Delano Roosevelt felt about himself. But we've been very lucky of having, you know, elite, basically, or highly educated individuals, you know, in senior positions of leadership from a political standpoint in this country. And, you know, and so you just kind of like click off and don't pay attention. Well, okay, they're, you can be cynical about it. They're doing this, they're doing that. But, you know, we've been pretty well served by many of the senior political leadership. I mean, overall, from an aggregate standpoint.
I would actually push back on that.
We didn't understand that you really have to hold these, you know, FUCKERs feet to the fire, because we never really had to before. And now we're learning that you have to. That's a long way of saying that we elected people that did their job by and large, and now all of a sudden we elected somebody who really just wants to burn the house
down. This guy's a special brand of human. I hope there's a special spot in hell for him, to be honest with you. But I think you're wrong, John, in the sense that this has been what I see happening here economically or whatever. I can't blame totally on Trump, not at all, because it started long before him. This is just a completion. He's actually just a guy who has decided to take it to its next level. But the idea of, I mean, the drug companies totally taking over the place happened under Obama. I mean, maybe had to start.
Yeah, fair enough. That's fair enough.
And actually had to start under Clinton. So I don't really. And actually, Bush did nothing. So they really did a start on him. You know, I mean, it was Clinton then Bush. But I mean, what we're seeing now, the real issues in the country in terms of drug pricing, in terms of, you know, emergency room price, all those kinds of things, and all the stuff that's happening in the middle class, you can't blame Trump. You can blame him for not fixing it, but he would have to fix it. It's already been screwed up. I mean, the idea of you know, the people's wages going up 2% a year and inflation going up 4%, that's been around since 2000. You can't pin that one on Trump. I mean,
okay. I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you.
I mean, let's be fair. I'll criticize what I think I need to criticize, but the fact that, you know, his thing is he's not doing anything to stop it. I mean, I don't think he's smart enough to even know what it is. But the fact is, he's not doing anything to stop it. But I mean, I don't know that he's any worse than the other guys. You know, type of a thing. So I mean,
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, as much as, who did the auto bailout? Was it Clinton or Bush?
Which one?
I think it was Bush.
It was after 9/11. It was the first one. It was Bush, but then the first one was Chrysler, but that was a loan.
No, that was in the 80s, I think.
Yeah, that was a loan.
But the auto bailout, I could never imagine Trump, because, you know, they, and also what Bush did, I think it was during 9/11, that actually got the banking system. It was about to go down. So they actually, I cannot imagine Trump with his staff. It's not just him, but he's got a bunch of clowns out there. These are not heavyweights.
Well, but the heavy...
Mark Carney...
No, but the heavyweights...
Mark Carney is a former governor of the Bank of England. So, anyways, I'll...
But I mean, we're talking... But even stuff like the Wells Fargo and Citigroup are rumored here to be looking for to buy a bank, because they're the only one of the big four that isn't over the 10% maximum. The other two guys are over. For what I'm talking about is the no bank is supposed to have 10% of the deposits, right? And yet, I believe Bank America and J.P. Morgan both do. Well, nothing's ever going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's called the structural risk.
Yeah, but that's been there long before Trump. I mean, nobody's willing to take on any of these people. So it's, you know, it's kind of an odd situation. But to a certain extent, you know, Carl and Hal are absolutely right that since we have rules, now we don't have anybody who I continue to get texts here about how Canada's screwing us, but whatever.
Okay, so how is, because I took the AI dump on why it fell apart. Automotive and truck exclusions, restrictions on foreign trade, that's what we wanted them. We did not want them to pursue independent trade or economic partnerships with other global nations, which nobody would agree with that. Sovereignty and culture.
Well, we're concerned about them bringing Chinese goods and sending them to here, but we also have an NVIDIA stuff to China. We're taking a 15% cut, which, by the way, by any normal person would say that's an export tariff, which is absolutely forbidden by the Constitution. Yet these guys are doing it. I mean, there's no conception of law or anything about anybody here. It's, you know, and I don't know how far you can go and have a civilized society, to be honest with you. When I came in this morning, I didn't even get down the block, and some lady blows right through a stop sign, like right in front of me. Okay, well, that's interesting. I mean, it's working. I don't know if it's working from the bottom up or the top down or whatever it is, but obviously it's someplace. I mean, why isn't 15% of NVIDIA's stuff going into God knows where, general taxation, somebody's pocket, I have no idea. How is that not an export tariff?
I wasn't even aware. I kind of knew it was going on, but I'm not aware of it. I mean, I'm not up to date on it.
You know, I mean, but that's what that is. I mean, we cut that deal. I mean, one of the when we get John here, if he's not already, one of our listeners and actually one of John and my dearest friends sent me a thing regarding what exactly is we've got an administration who's calling everybody else communists. And yet we've taken a piece of 30 companies. That's what communists do. That's not what capitalists do. The government has a chunk of 30 companies. According to the LA Times and a bunch of other people that I can't get into. What is that? And yet we have a president calling other people communists. I haven't heard any of these people who are dumb enough to call themselves socialists say we're going to start buying all the companies. Have you? I'm not saying I like these people, but that's not... They're not saying that, are they?
No, they're not.
They're all saying that, though.
They're all going to buy every company.
Well, the government should be, you know, not just, you know, supervising private industry, but controlling it. They don't like to be called on it. But
What is this guy doing?
The DSA, and I certainly didn't see that. I mean, they certainly want health care. They want
control the means of production. I mean,
what do you call the thing we have now? Where we're now part of 30 companies. We the government, whoever the hell that is, buys a chunk of Intel, and then we give them all the business. What is that? That's a very fascist system, by the way. But does anybody even know what these details are?
I certainly don't.
I mean, what are we doing? I don't quite get. I mean, how is our tax on the chips going to China and not an export tax, John? An export tariff.
I think that one of the problems is a lot of this stuff that we consider private industry or has nothing to do with governments, but it's all crossed over into, you know, the field of national security or insecurity. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, the kind of products we're dealing with and the companies that produce them and who consumes them and what they consume them for has really shifted. This isn't just like automobiles or, you know, steam shovels or something that we're shipping around the world. It's something that has to do with intelligence. Well, and
you do realize that virtually all the motors in German tanks were made by Ford. So it's not exactly new.
Yeah, I mean, there was always trafficking, black market, and, you know, double dealing.
Well, hang on, Tom. You mean it was made in a Ford factory that was sold to that the Germans took over?
Well, but long before
it wasn't being exported out of Dearborn,
right? But the
okay,
but the they were doing stuff for the Germans when they were attacking other people before we got into war.
Henry Ford, as brilliant as he was a hardcore anti-Semite and fascist. He had relationships with Germany, which were perfectly legal, from 39 to 41.
I think it was before then, but long before then.
And once the war was over, they were right back in. Of course, we asked them to go back in, too, to help resurrect the economy.
Yeah, but we weren't exactly all that. Henry Ford, he could rank right up there with some of the people today, and Harold Janine and people.
Yeah.
He's politically naive, in addition to his other failings or strengths. I mean, he was a hardcore pacifist, and it kind of humiliated World War One for trying to end the, you know, the European conflict in the first couple of weeks of it by this peace ship that went off with all these socialists and, you know, far out characters, and he was sort of even an outlier in that group. But they thought they'd come back with, you know, a peace treaty among all the belligerents, and he was just roasted in the press for this kind of.
Screwed a guy for wanting peace.
Yeah, I mean,
that's one of his
strengths. But he clearly didn't have, you know, a read of the room or the people he was associating with. He was concerned with the objective, and I think it turned into a kind of.
Well, John, you know, who really didn't read the room was Charles Lindbergh. Okay, he really didn't read the room, and you know, he his wife had warned him stop making these speeches, and then Roosevelt, I have a book actually on him, but Roosevelt was, you know, he banned him from the military. The Air Force quietly allowed him to go on. I mean, he did go on a lot of he was piloting bombers. But no, the one who really didn't read the room was Charles Lindbergh, and paid for it dearly.
You know what he did for the Air Force? And one of the newer planes, I don't know if it was the P-47 or P-51 or something, they could never get it never got the range it was supposed to get, or some story, and he went and redid the engineering of the carburetors or something to give it. It actually was a massive asset to the Air Force, even though he turned into such kind of a mental goofball. But he really knew his crap when it came to planes.
Oh no, he was a very solid. But I've got to get going here. But I'm gonna next week. I want to talk about one thing, John. I want you to help me do it. Jimmy is you as well, and Tom. So your listeners probably know that I'm fascinated by Asian history. Especially the 18th century or the 19th century and into the 20th century. So I'm reading a book called Breaking Open Japan. This is Admiral Perry's voyage there in 1853 or 4. But so now this is the shogunate, okay, and it led to the Meiji Restoration where they put the emperor back in charge. So if you go back, I mean, we all have probably seen the TV show Shogun. The Japanese samurai were extremely fierce, you know, hardcore fighters.
It was a whole lifetime to learn that.
Yeah. So they have 250 years of peace. So here comes Perry, who was an imperialist. Okay, he shows up. Well, by this time, after 250 years of peace, you know, some of these samurai, their kimonos are a little tight around the middle, if you know what I mean. So they were all running around trying to find their armor. They couldn't find it because they hadn't worn it for so long. It was handed down by their grandfather or something.
It's sort of like going to a wedding where you need your tux you haven't worn in 30 years.
Yeah, I know. It's like they're all running around because these naval ships. And the contemporary of that time, the contemporary Japanese chroniclers, or I'm sorry, I mispronounced the word, were saying they were running hither and thither, trying to find all the old armor.
Oh God! Well, yeah. We'll talk about that next week, but I'll interject a little bit. John and James, I took a course that actually was a 2-quarter course, University of Chicago, in the history of economic thought, where they went through every country, and actually it's served me well, I don't know about well, but it's served me to this day in terms of how the definitions of all these numbers really are, in terms of how you define GDP, mean, and how when countries move off the barter system into more of a money system, how your GDP grows exponentially, even though you're really not gaining anything. Well, you are maybe a little bit, because now all of a sudden everything's counted. But part of what, big part of the course was the Japanese industrial revolution. And when you look at all the different, you know, when countries get where they are today or whatever, even where they were in the 70s, there's this big, you know, change from rural to whatever. And the point was in Europe, and Britain was kind of the leader in this, it took, you know, several centuries for the Industrial Revolution to sort of happen, because it just, it was like one little invention at a time. It took like forever. And then when the U.S. got here, you know, we're here, the colonies, then we had the War of Independence, and we ended up, and we actually used tariffs at the time, and, you know, in regards to, this must be the only chapter Trump ever read, we used tariffs at the time to essentially protect the new sewing industry to the point where they could get started, because otherwise Britain would have, just were outcompeted them. We shipped all of the cotton and everything we grew here to Britain, but they were so terrific. Just because you get a load of cotton doesn't mean you got thread.
Just because and with you got, child labor yeah. and everything else.
Oh, yeah, but just because you got thread doesn't mean you got cloth, right? I mean, there's a huge process from one to the other. And so anyway, we put tariffs on here to essentially make it so that people could start, you know, the thread making and cloth making machines here. Without Britain, you know, it would never have been economically viable for somebody to do it here without the tariff protection. All right, so, like, you know, so in some sense, for a purpose like that, they served something for. But anyway, it took the U.S. I'm going to say 100 years for the Industrial Revolution here, because you had stuff to grow on. And when Perry landed in Japan, Japan was able to essentially, you talk about 1885, and these guys were like a world power by 1919.
Let me tell you, I actually did some research on this. So we talk about China's rise, and it the Chinese people should be applauded for what they did. They are hardworking. I mean, I know that this could be stereotypic, but they're hardworking, intelligent people. So in Japan, so you have the, you know, Perry comes in, he opens up, he breaks the system, and that's another bigger discussion. So we purchased Alaska 1866, something like that. The Meiji Restoration, which means the Shogun was out, the Emperor was in, and they completely reformed their system in 1868. So they had around 20 kilometers of rail lines, maybe 100. That's it. By 1920, they had per capita, and I did the research on population and land mass, almost equivalent to the United States. Think about that. 50 years, because, I mean, I guess my argument is railroads would be the high tech of today's world back then. So Japan grew from a world power, from just railroads, to the equivalent of the United States in a period of 40 to 50 years. And it was a feudal society, to be polite.
Well, they had a navy by 1906 to kick the ass of the Russians.
They had, oh yeah, they... And from what I've heard, make no mistake, they still have a very good navy.
Well, a little bit. Are they the ones that are making the submarines for Australia, or is that... Didn't they bid on making Australia new submarines? And they beat us out on the bid or some story like that?
So Australia, what they did is they went to... first France did it, and they got... And the Aussies got pissed off because the French were taking the month of August off. When, you know, because Australia has a strategic issue, has a military issue.
Yeah.
They have a coastline as big as ours, if not bigger, and they have to defend it. They got pissed off, and so what we did is it was the United States and Britain were assembling the submarines here, and they're buying nuclear-powered submarines, and they're going to eventually build them in Australia. That's what that's about.
Yeah, we need the world alarm more.
What they did is they bought Japanese frigates.
Ah.
And they're good, too.
Well, why aren't we in the arms business? It seems like, boy, right now we'd be doing pretty well. This reminds me, You know, this reminds me.
You know, the one thing I will give Trump credit for, okay, and Mr. Flanagan, you know, I am not a fan, but he is doing concrete things to bring shipbuilding back.
Like what?
Oh no, well, what we've had to do is get Koreans and Japanese to buy shipyards here, and retool them and train the people. We don't have how many welders do we have that know how to weld in a shipyard? So that he's done a reasonable job with that. I will give him credit.
I will say this, and maybe in some areas where you do lose your expertise in some ways, I don't see it. The idea that we can't do that stuff from here is abhorrent to me.
No, we're not. We're not buying it. We're having them invest because there's no company, the U.S. companies that are doing it.
They're
investing in the existing shipyards and upgrading them.
Right, we have a stock market. Nvidia went out and got $500 billion. Is going to go out and get. No, you can't tell me that if we had somebody wants to build ships here and is going to make a profit, they can't raise money here.
Obviously they can't.
Well, I mean, the thing is that we have.
You know, the other thing too, Tom.
Yeah, but we only have
the only naval ship, the only shipbuilding expertise we have is in the Navy, right now. It is so underwater, and that's a bad pun. Underwater in regards to the backlog.
We've had to bring
expertise in, and but anyways, I think I might be missing your point.
My point is, we have the same group that canceled and threw everybody out of work on the minesweepers in Wisconsin. That's a shipbuilding company.
No, that was a frigate. They were not making minesweepers. They were making frigates up there.
It was the Constellation.
Hang on. It was the Constellation class. We bought a design from the Italians. We modified 90% of it. 85%.
Actually, they were minesweepers, I think.
No, they were frigates.
All right, well, whatever.
And it was four times over budget, and they couldn't get the ships out the door. So you know what they did is they had to cancel it, okay? And then they took a Coast Guard frigate, okay, and modify it because we have to get hulls in the water. What they have done is they kept that shipyard in Wisconsin going because they need the capacity, and they're going to give them other business. So that's what happened. Hey, Mr. Flanagan, I promise next week we can argue about Donald Trump. How's that?
That's great.
No problem.
Well, I mean, there's political points being made to bring some big group over here, being a piece of it, sticking the shovel in the ground and all that bullshit. I just don't think we have to do that. At that scale.
I disagree with that.
Okay, fine.
I'm supposed to go work out, but...
All right, well, go work out. We'll talk next week.
Okay. I might... You know, if you're not careful, I might bomb your...
That's all right.
Your podcast this week.
That's all right.
All right. Talk to you later. Hey, Mr. Flanagan, when are we going to meet after work one of these days?
He never comes out. He doesn't really exist. This is all AI.
Yeah, that's why he says...
I do exist, John, and I'd love to meet you.
He's been on so
all
much
right.
that we
talk to you guys later.
He's been on so many years that we just filter all his old shows through AI, and AI comes up with the answers. The same
By
voice.
The way, talk about AI. You know, I've had these amateur photo books I make. I put all my photos up to ChatGPT. They came back with a review. And of course, what they always do is go, "This is a superb collection of photos in the spirit of, I don't know, Mr. Lawler, who's a favorite? The spirit of
Ansel Adams. The
Magnum photographers, this and that. And then they'll go really well. And it's very good. They pick out all the good photos, okay, the ones I would pick out. They say, however, you may want to consider this. and then you have like two pages of suggestions. It's really pretty good.
They give us and take us, yeah.
Well, all right, talk to you
all right.
later.
Take care, John.
I think the issue, and the issue always is with me, is when people say stuff, all right, and you always want to take, I'm going to say, the easier direct way out, and I'm not accusing Mr. Lee of that, but when you say, okay, we've sort of lost some shipbuilding stuff, we just popped out another aircraft carrier, we just popped out a nuclear sub. I agree that if, I mean, I absolutely would agree that if somebody wanted me to start a railroad manufacturing firm here in Chicago, it would take me a long time because a lot of that expertise is gone. And you would have to start up slowly. But, you know, then again, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. If you absolutely decide, okay, well, that can't happen, we can't raise the capital here, we can't do the training here, even if it takes some time, then now you're lost in this other malaise of having to go basically plead with a South Korean firm to come over here, give them God knows what. They're going to bring stuff over, and maybe they'll do what you want them to do, maybe they won't. And then we're going to give them money from the government and all this tax benefits and so forth. I don't know that that gets you to the same place as kind of just starting and doing it ourselves. I mean, that's my... I mean, maybe the other side, on the other side of this argument, they could be right. I'm sort of just not convinced, John, that we can't, if we think we need this going forward, there's probably 10 things we ought to do in terms of basic industries to start this up that we need to do like yesterday. You know, and the idea that, don't worry, we'll cut a deal with the Japanese or to open up a big plant 5 years from now, that's just not my way. I mean, they could be right, but it's just not my way. I mean, am I that much wrong?
Yeah, certainly the mistake was made a long time ago, Tom. It's the same thing we did with our steel industry and our electronics industry, our auto industry. I mean, you can make a long list of places we were happy to wave goodbye to and throw all the people who were earning wages and had pension plans and everything else out of work in the process and kill whole communities, you know, that have never bounced back. That would have been, you know, not the way to go about this if you ever wanted to have a crack at doing this in sometime in the future, because you would have to build from scratch or go and get somebody else to come in and help do it for you. But you know, that was the big mistake, and that was almost criminal, you know, behavior.
Where do you think this our steel situation is? We had somebody on the air a while ago, softball buddy Bob, who's in that industry, and he said that's he goes, the fact we import a lot of steel. He goes, there's no question about that. He goes, but it's total bullshit to think that any single order that anybody wants to come up with today cannot be done in this country. And there'll be people bidding for it.
That's been the case recently, but, you know, in the 80s and 90s,
I don't know that we ever had a... We had to go overseas to get something for a bridge, that we ever had to go overseas to get something for an aircraft carrier. I mean... Yes, there's imports that...
I mean, all the steel production, you know, in Indiana and, you know, elsewhere didn't just stop. It went elsewhere.
A lot of the elsewhere was elsewhere here. Those people never invested a dime. If you could take a massive history, this would be an interesting project for all of us, to be honest with you. What became these steel companies? They never went past the open hearth some of these places. They never... Part of, you know, if you really want to trace it back, John, it was, what's the other, I should know this, the new, when they rebuilt the factories in Europe, they used the new technology, and we never did, because guess what, they never ran out. What became more bloated than some of the steel companies here? And then they got into a routine where they had these overdone pension funds, and then people bought them and stole the pension money, then didn't want the company anymore.
Yeah, they
anymore.
Preyed on their work.
They absolutely preyed upon everybody. I mean, none of those people went to jail. Where's Mr. Carl when I say that? I mean, I happen to know somebody. I won't say father of father of one of my very, very closest people. Retired when he was, I don't know what age, from Ryerson, that became Inland, and somebody told him, you know, this place is going under. You better take your retirement like this week. When he didn't want to retire, but he was of retirement age. And a year later, I don't think any of the guys he worked with ended up with their pension. They ended up with some government pension because somebody stole it. None of that stuff was ever prosecuted. None of that money was ever returned and find out
that
where it went.
That was the crime.
Yeah. And so, I mean, why would anybody want to work for a steel company after all that happened? I
mean, for a long time, we never had to import any steel. I mean, for what we were doing phenomenal things with it, but we didn't have to import any of it. But then, you know, greed or, you know, sloppy supervision or whatever else, we let these, you know, places kind of do what they wanted to grab whatever they could and then just leave a, you know, a stinking hulk behind when they closed down operations. And, you know, I mean, I can't begin to, like, estimate what that meant for, you know, cities in northern Indiana or Chicago when, you know, this whole thing fell apart in the 50s and 60s.
Well, when somebody comes in or we listen to, you know, we even have people on the show to talk about why don't people want to be blue-collar workers anymore? We're all a bunch of weenies. Nobody wants to get dirty. Everybody wants to go to college and just get paid a whole bunch of dough. That's part of it. It's not the whole story, is it? The whole story is anybody working those kind of businesses in Chicago, except for a few, all got screwed.
Right.
Wasn't like
their jobs were taken from them.
Their jobs were taken from them, and their pension in most cases got stolen from them.
Right. So, I mean, well, that would leave a bad taste, you know, intergenerationally.
Well, you certainly aren't going to want that for your kid. I mean, Pullman had three, they had people who were three generations worked there when I was there. It was the oldest company in New York Stock Exchange. All of a sudden, one day it was gone. Why would you ever say to your kid, I want you to grow up to be a welder? Why would you ever say that? I mean, really, why would you?
Oh. And you know, being a Pullman grad, why is it impossible for any transit company in this country to purchase rolling stock in the United States? Have it manufactured? It doesn't.
Actually, it's a Chinese company. It's a Chinese company. It's assembling the... Well, you're.
Well, that was by design. I mean, a design that, you know.
No, but now when you say that, careful, Jim. We try and get a little bit of detail.
Yeah,
but I mean, saying the CTA cars. I know this because I worked on the bid. The CTA cars are 60% bought, and I'm going to say the wheel and axles are probably made here. The motors are made here. The air conditioners are made here, and the. The shell is made where? In the south suburbs someplace. And it's owned by a Chinese company, which it shouldn't have to be. But
right.
By and large, it's not like... And the people who put it together are here. So really, as much as I don't like the idea that it's a Chinese company, 80 or 90% of the input is still here, I would guess. At least. Right?
Well, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess they could be important Chinese air conditioners, wheel and axles, but I would doubt it. I don't. I mean,
but I don't think there would be much stopping them.
No, well, probably not. But I'm saying, I mean, before you say, even me to say, you're assembled here.
I would just say there's no reason why 100% of that couldn't be produced by an American-controlled company, if that's what you thought was a priority, which clearly, you know, a long time ago people stopped making a priority.
I mean, I guess people could make wheel and axles and ship them from China cheaper, but oh boy, I'd be x-raying every one of those wells. But, I mean,
we've done the same thing with pharmaceuticals, too.
Well,
the list is endless, and it's all part of a, you know, a strategy that there were globalists before anybody knew what the word meant or could have defined adequately.
ITT, they were globalists. Governments were just in the way of business people that really knew what to do and they would save the world. Harold Janine, it hasn't changed at all, has it?
Right, and I mean, it doesn't matter if there's war between parties, the business keeps going on. Krupp, IG Farben, and all these places—it doesn't make any difference. You know, who cares what these little countries are doing among themselves? We got bigger.
Well, if you're a bullet manufacturer, you do care. You love war.
Oh yeah, right. Let's start another one.
Yep. Well, and for a long time, what were 80% or something of the bullets you got shot in the world was an American-made bullet. Well, now other people are doing that though. We got competition there. I just have this. If you walk around now, if you talk to younger people, and not that they're dumb or whatever, but what is the stock market for? Well, man, I get to buy some stock and make some dough. No. Stock market is a secondary market that allows the free flow of capital where if the three of us, James John Chief Corporation, what could we make? God, hula hoops, maybe. Ours hula hoops would look like they were square, but, you know, the idea for us to go out and get capital and get public people to invest in our company. The New York Stock Exchange is a secondary market which says Now I can get out in and out of that investment anytime I want to. That's a positive, but the primary is in people investing in the company, in the, not the secondary market, but in a public offerings. So would anybody go invest in IBM if, well, I mean, people do invest in private companies, but would anybody really invest to that level in IBM if there wasn't an active secondary market in the shares where you could get in and out afterward? That's what the market is for. Does anybody even know that? I mean, everybody, you know, criticized me for being against this, bringing people in and, you know, government taking a piece and all this other kind. I just happen to have faith in the markets and the bond markets and stuff we have here. I think if somebody, how much did the idiots just get for SpaceX? How much did they go out and get? And they only sold like what, 20% of the place? James, what was that? I forget the numbers, but they raised what? How many billion dollars? And they only sold something. You're telling me we can't start a shipbuilding company here?
No, but yeah, it was 20%, but then another 10% just went out onto the market.
I'm saying the amount of money you can raise here, the idea that I mean, the fact that we may have lost all the expertise, I'm not saying that in some areas we don't have to buy some of that back. But we're still not starting any of the basic stuff it would take for us to get there, are we? I don't see anything on there, do you? I mean, some of the places like, you know, where Kevin teaches, Ivy Tech, they're trying to keep up where there's people available for this stuff. I mean, I think if all of a sudden we were bringing, you know, there was a plant in Indiana or Illinois where they were going to need this amount of expertise, I have a feeling that Kevin's school would be right on it. Or maybe even a couple of schools here where we can train people. Okay.
Well, you know, when,
criticize me for having faith, I guess. That's what everybody's doing.
My employer had a teaching lab at the Ford stamping plant, you know, out in Chicago Heights, East Chicago Heights, unincorporated, Cook County, whatever, because it was on the job. You know, this is where you went. This is where you were going to get a paycheck. You were learning the things that Ford was happy to teach you in their, you know, under their roof, and you got academic credit for it. And, you know, you already had it, you know, you're making a track record with the people who were making your education possible. It's sort of a handshake deal, and that there should be more of that kind of stuff.
Well, Pullman, they never trusted anybody to train their people. They trained their own welders. You went there and you did something else here. Even if you were a welder, Pullman had huge advancements in welding technology. As a matter of fact, they were the first place to weld aluminum. I think the airlines did some, but the airlines weren't big on welding aluminum, but they used rivets, they used flush rivets, and they used a lot of sandblast technology to form wings and stuff. But they actually, there were a couple of aluminum bridges in this country that the bridge was welded together at Pullman, and it's assembled on the bridge because the company entrusts their own welders to weld the aluminum right on the job site. Welding aluminum is a big deal. And Pullman was the first place that could do that on any kind of level. So they made aluminum cars.
Well, and it wasn't just the jobs and the tax base and everything that fled when these companies closed down or moved, but it was that training that went out the window too.
Yeah, and everybody bitches, well, I can't hire 25 welders. You got to train them. But now you have to.
Right, that's not part of the. That's one of the reasons why they wanted to get out of the business. They didn't want to deal with that.
Yeah,
throw it. Let people over there make a wage that people here would scoff at. But you know, we're going to make the benefit. We don't care where we have a plant. It doesn't make any difference to us if it's here or in the Far East. We're making more money if it's in the Far East. So what's the issue here?
Well, I think for building like a railroad car, I don't see how you can actually compete with somebody making it here, because there's the man hours. Even if you pay people more, you got to do it right. If you have to do it over, or something's wrong with it. Good Lord, I mean, everybody bitches about how many people in the auto make. You know how many hours are in a car now? It's like 30. And a car costs $80,000. You think those people are costing?
It's got to be less next year.
Yeah, well, but I mean, it might not even be 30. But what is it? How many? You know, the car's $85,000. The guy makes $50 an hour. Okay, it's $1,500. Where's the rest? I mean, you know, when we lab all this stuff out there, we're not very big on in detailing into it. But anyway, a lot of the stuff that the government is doing is impacting the markets and impacting these companies. I mean, you cannot take. I mean, we have, you know, people who criticize all the time what I'm talking about. I've never seen the government, except maybe Gulf War One or something, as embroiled in this market as they are now. I mean, we got a president, and, you know, somebody, of course, will text me and defend the guy. He's selling access to trading information. How does that not create, you know, sandwich signs in every street in the country? Does anybody not even know what this is?
Don't you see that this is, it may look at from a slightly different direction, that this is what has to be done to fill the vacuum that these companies created themselves?
Trump has to sell information?
No, I mean, Trump has to be, the government has to be involved in industry in a way that they didn't have to be when the government was minding their own store and had the same pretty much objectives as the government where they were based.
Well,
and now that's certainly not the case.
You allow everybody to get together and then you say, how'd this happen?
Well, that's my question. You know, and how do you reverse it? What is
going
on?
How do you know? That's a good question, buddy.
Try to reverse it.
I mean, how do you, this hospital thing, boy, oh boy, how do you turn that bus around? But pick an industry. I mean, you know, I mean, and you know, Lou is our one of, you know, obviously like our best guest and a terrific guy, but he'll you know, people can argue both sides because of their politics. And, you know, he's the one who sent me the list of, God, how many mergers have been in the defense industry in the last 40 years. And then he says, well, gee, it's very competitive now. Wait a minute, how can it be competitive? You're the one who just sent me the list. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I mean, there probably are some mom-and-pop stores, and you got Trump's kid, of course, blasting into the drone business because he's Trump's kid. Well, I guess that's a way to do it. But
is it a question of there being too competitive?
Too competitive.
So that you begin to look at it clearly.
Well, buying another firm, so there's only one bidder, is not exactly competitive. That could be considered anti-competitive by some people. I mean, it depends on how you look at it. Some people think it's good business. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, the result may be completely anti-competitive, but I think it's kind of like competition gone haywire.
Well, but people, you know, we don't teach this stuff anymore. And I think
it never used to be the case that you would think, you know, production in a foreign country came into the picture at all, because it defied your imagination. How can we make money if we, you know, pay people overseas to build something and then pay to have it shipped here and moved around? How could we ever possibly make money on a scale like that?
There's a,
and of course, guess what?
But there's an advantage in terms of some of it. I mean, when you say wages are cheaper someplace than some other place, some of it is legit. I mean, when I say legit, it's economically explainable. And you know, there's some areas that have an advantage in available human capital. I use the term human capital, which is really what you're supposed to use. There's more people willing to work, or the birth rate's higher, or whatever it is. There's more people willing to work, and maybe they have issues with, they don't have as much power, they don't have as much water, they have other stuff. So the human capital, you can get at a cheaper price. Okay, it's the same thing really as in the U.S. If you happen to be, well, I was going to say Hoover Dam, but the lake's so low, I don't know. But you could be in the Columbia River. All of a sudden, your power's cheaper. In Chicago, the advantage that what was the name of it? Finkel and Sons had in the steel business in Chicago was probably unique to anybody in this country. They had a basically an open hearth, forge or furnace, and was electric. And you say to yourself, what do you mean electric? How the hell could anybody have an electric blast furnace? Well, if you operate only at night, which they did, and Chicago had all these nuclear and coal-fired plants that were running all night, you could get the electricity here in Chicago cheaper than anywhere in the world. Maybe not in the world, but surely cheaper than China, cheaper than Vietnam, cheaper than anybody.
That was a steady supply.
Steady supply. So their advantage was, now other places, now Vietnam has more people, less power, less water, at some point, the people are going to work for less there than here, all right? Just as Finkel took advantage of the power here being cheaper than any place else, and they worked at night. Now, but now that haul drops off when people working are 14 years old and doing other kinds of things. Now, that's not... Now we're talking in a different world, right? We're not talking about regular people just making a little less. I mean, there's whole levels to this stuff, don't you think? I mean, the idea, and plus the idea is at some point, the people over there will have enough money to get the capital equipment, to get maybe the power, so where their people will start demanding more money and those kind of, that was how this was all supposed to work. But the politics, especially in China, intervened and said, oh, no, we're going
to
make...
Foolhardy to think it would.
It did here. It did in Europe.
But, I mean, we knew we were dealing with a totalitarian government.
You don't think
still that, they had a kind of fantasy about how we could
change. I don't know the Chinese are any worse than the coal miners' owners or Pullman was in the 1800s, but those guys managed to get the government piled in on the side of the management. We're here, we didn't. And how many people died in union things here? But somewhere along the line, we were able to yank some vestige of fair play away from the management. Okay, which maybe is sinking the other way now. But we were.
Well, it was private sector unions.
But people it started this in the 70s when we started doing stuff all overseas. I mean, I was in class. Milton Friedman said, "Well, the idea in Mexico is you're going to start people at $3 an hour. All of a sudden, they're going to demand four, five, six, and all of a sudden you're going to make all these customers. The usual thing, you give people the razors so you can sell them the blades, type of thing. Well, it turns out it didn't work out that way. It certainly didn't work out that way in China, because the government said, okay, somebody's going to get rich here, but it's going to be us and not them. Now, Mexico, I don't know what happened there. Is it the gangs got the money or somebody's got the money? But
yeah.
But I don't think in the early 70s that people felt that was going to happen. Because, by the way, look what happened here. We got our own middle class, and they're going to get theirs. Well, it never happened, did it?
Right.
But I don't mean so it. Go ahead.
We're still kind of, we haven't really seen the full extent of how the Industrial Revolution has, kind of kept growing and expanding and becoming ever more revolutionary, and we're kind of maybe missing some of the signs along the way about what needed to be done. It used to be that if you had a need for something, usually agriculturally speaking, you wanted sugar cane. Well, you went to the place in the world where sugar cane grew practically on its own, and you paid slave labor to harvest it. Cotton, okay, same thing, and we'll be happy to ship it back someplace where we have the technology and the mills to mass produce some end product using this stuff. But then after a while, it's like, well, we don't need to do any of this stuff locally, except if it's a question of saving money on the wages. And now that has just like completely changed any kind of a balance sheet for what it means to operate a business or make a profit. It doesn't really make any difference where it happens, as long as you can find some place where the living standard is more debased than your own, and you can profit off of that difference.
Hey, not to change subjects, but next week, or maybe Wednesday, if you're piling on wherever we have another guest, we haven't talked about this. I was at this big shindig wedding Saturday night, had a very nice time, and was talking to some people regarding they're working on this. I'd heard this stuff, but about all the big things we talk about on the show, we haven't talked about this one at all. These 3M, what's the chemical that's in some of the water places that's really affecting people's health? 3M was it's made in all plastics. We're going to do some research on this and talk about it. But evidently, it's one of the biggest court cases, and I was talking to a couple of judges at this wedding, and it's all over the place. Evidently,
microplastics?
Yeah, but evidently it's one of my brother's daughter, my niece, her boyfriend, terrific guy. He's a fireman, paramedic guy. Known him for a long time. Terrific. He said, yeah, the fire departments have stopped using that foam, because evidently it was all in the foam. And a lot of firefighters that used to spray the foam, you know, whatever, on fires and stuff, have this stuff, and it gets in you, and it never goes away. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like the asbestos. It's like it's that, and evidently there's cases all over the place, and evidently you can in the water supply, it has a certain DNA to it, where you can pinpoint that it came from 3M, or the other one came from another company. And evidently, this is a massive health issue. And oh, by the way, it's a massive legal case working its way through. We need to find somebody who's kind of expert on this and talk about it, because evidently it's a real big story that we haven't covered. And it's a very health problem study. Sort of like asbestos is still killing people our age with mesothelioma that you don't even really know. Merlin Olsen died from that, right?
Yep.
I think, didn't Johnny Lattner?
I think so.
And who was the other big football star or baseball star that died of it in his older age? There are people you wouldn't. And what did Merlin Olsen do? He worked as a sub for a piping company one summer in high school or something. And it was like years and years ago he was exposed to it. He went on and had a great career and other kinds of stuff, but. I mean, this stuff is seriously affecting, you know, the health of a lot of people, and it's evidently with the people at 3M, you know, and my Southside morals is easy on this. You put out something, if it's helping everybody, you know, I guess you use it. But the first day you find out there's something's wrong, then you better come clean. And I don't think they did that. Sort of like DDT and. Asbestos, people knew about it long before they admitted it, right? Well, cigarettes, same way.
Yeah, same thing with the vaccines.
Yeah, well, same thing with the, well, yeah. And well, there's still going to be some people that say, look how many people it saved. I don't know about that. I don't know, were we ever going to get, is anybody ever going to, you know, it was, I had a long discussion with our just guest, John Lee, regarding the Fauci situation. You know, and how this ever became one side of the aisle to the other, I have no idea. Somewhere, someplace, I don't know, Dan, you know, there's a middle ground on all this, and there's judgment on everything, and I think you and Mr. Lawler know what I'm talking about. When I was on the board of the SIBO, if you really started to go after, you know, Goldman Sachs or Merrill Lynch or somebody, do you really want, even though you had the power, do you really want to cause some kind of a settlement and a promise to not do it again? Would you rather do that, or would you rather have, you know, Goldman Sachs suspended from trading on the CBOE for 2 days, the headline in the Wall Street Journal? And where do you want to go with this? Do you really want to yank somebody from Goldman Sachs and put them in jail for, you know, stealing $10,000 on an order on the trading floor? I mean, I don't, or any other firm, I mentioned those guys. Do you really want to do that, even though you have the power, you have the right? Yet if nobody ever does it, look where you end up. You know, there is no such rule for people that are that big. So I don't know. I'm not smart enough to pick the middle ground, but there has to be some sort of middle ground. I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't know that the COVID case is the one where you actually have to dig down every detail and find out. Does anybody really want to find out the correlation between the big drug companies and Fauci and the people in that group and how they may have been swayed and what representatives and senators on both sides of the aisle got paid and why Trump, and I'm not blaming him personally, why Trump gave zillions of dollars to seven companies to come up with vaccines if everybody thought there wasn't even going to be a vaccine? I mean, how far and how fairly can you actually do this? I don't know if I want to do it, but then again, you got to do it once or twice just to prove to people you just might someday. I don't know. But what's the line there? You're the attorney.
Well, the price of not doing it again, you know, and that's just like, you know, George Santayana, whatever, those who don't, you know, learn from history, you know, will end up repeating it. So the same thing happened in 2007, 2008. Nobody went to jail over what happened then. A couple people did go to jail in the SNL. You know,
none of the real crooks. Bush's
none
kid,
of the real crooks.
Bush's right. Kid didn't. He was on the board of Silverado, right?
Right. And you know, of course, once somebody, you know, the you know, the fog lifts, people resume their normal lives, things kind of go back to normal, people gradually forget about it, and a whole generation of people comes up that has no memory of it whatsoever. So it's you know, what we did or didn't do in 2007, 2008, I think is a guarantee it's going to happen again. And maybe it's already happening. Maybe it's already happening.
I think it's already happening. I don't think it ever stopped. A couple people go to jail, and you know, there's.
That's the worst thing. Is it the business, you know, picks up where it left off and never looks back. So it's now full steam ahead.
Did anybody ever go to jail for Iran-Contra? I don't think so.
No. I mean, they were convicted of lying, you know. But that's, I don't think they ever served time. You know?
There's kind of, as they used to say in the trading floor, there's three kinds of people in the world, you know. Some people make things happen, some people watch things happen, and most people wonder what happened, right?
What happened?
But, you know, I think there's also another, all you have to do is drive the Ryan, right? You'll see, once in a great while, you'll see somebody pulled over. I mean, maybe once a year, you know, for egregious speeding or something, if you even catch the guy. Somebody pulled over, and then you will have a significant amount of people say, oh man, the police are out today, and people will kind of slow down. Then you're going to have people that say, he's busy now, he can't catch me, and they speed up. Am I right or not?
Yeah.
And I think when you have stuff like the Silverado savings and loan, or not Silverado, savings loan, once a few people went to jail, people that maybe pissed people off politically or whatever, I mean, the fact that, you know, Trump and the Biden group going after people they don't like, it's out of control now, but it's sort of never, virtually every one of the major insider trading cases have all been like some guy from Hong Kong or AUK or something, right? It's never been anybody here you knew was doing it, right? I mean, it's never been.
Right.
So, but once you get one or two people, the message to the rest of the hooligans is, okay, they're busy. Now I can go on to keep doing it. I don't think any of this stuff ever necessarily stops. I mean, I think there's drugs all over the place that are pushed on people because of money. And now that you have these physicians groups telling guys what to prescribe, I don't know. If you had a physician in one of those groups that prescribed something that was $5 instead of $200, I mean, you're going to throw them out and fire them? Probably, huh?
Yep.
But you're not going to get anybody who says, oh, by the way, this group gave a bunch of money to these guys and now they're prescribing the new drug and money's in somebody's pocket. That guy's, what are the chances of him going to jail? One in a zillion?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, China just imprisoned the CEO of Evergrande, you know, for life. The real estate empire that started crashing about 4 years ago. That's highly publicized. I don't think it's going to, I don't know what kind of effect it will have in China being imprisoned for doing it.
Who's the guy here? I forget his name. Who's the incredibly tan dude that always had the blue shirt with the white collar? That was that Countrywide, Jim?
Angelo Mozillo. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Where did they go? Was they Wells Fargo?
No.
Somebody
Bank of America.
Bank of America. Okay. Who did Wells Fargo buy? Was that Merrill Lynch?
No. Well, that was Bank of America.
Bank of America.
Okay. Well, Bank. But that guy, he's not in a cell, is he?
Nope.
I mean, he wasn't even charged.
The way it works now, you know, if some impropriety surfaces and they're reprimanded and you're fined, you know, and the fine may be millions, but you know, that isn't going to cause that company's stock to tank necessarily. It isn't going to change their behavior, that's for sure. So, imprisoning, you know, whole board of directors, that might affect their stock.
Why not start with, you're off the board, you can never serve on another board. At least something.
Yeah, well,
something. Let's just do that.
Novel approach. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's her name? Was it? James, help me here. It was Phil Graham's wife, Wendy Graham?
Wendy?
She was on the board of Enron, and wasn't she the head of the I'll spank you if you need it committee? What the hell is that? The
governance committee.
Wasn't she chairman of the governance committee? What the hell? what kind of a job did she do?
Well, there's worse instances of that now.
Where? Well, maybe, but at the time it was right up there.
Right.
When people,
she didn't go to jail, nor.
No, she didn't. She went on to something else. Did she become? Was she a cabinet person after that?
But I got promoted.
She got promoted. I mean, how do you not know that people on the board are taking other companies and peeling the you know who they those guys? It was Skilling's brother, right? The weatherman here in Chicago. It was his brother.
Oh yeah, Jeffries.
Yeah, it was the most beloved weatherman ever in Chicago. Was his brother?
Tom Skilling is.
He went to jail over.
Jeff Skilling.
Jeffrey Skilling went to jail.
But he went to country club.
Well, it's still when you can't leave, it's still jail.
And he still kept his money. I mean, he was one of them. Unlike Ken Lay, that once the stock hit like an all-time high, he started dumping it like crazy.
Well, there's another question: is Ken Lay really dead?
No, he's still around.
I think he still is too. Did he really have the famous heart attack? What was he? And he was a big bushy. Bush called him Kenny Boy, right?
Yeah.
But you know where those guys
were? The whole thing was just completely enmeshed in Texas politics.
Well, you know where they got the playbook from? It was the Union Pacific. Or was it the Central? One of the two. They got the contract to lay the track, the original cross country. I mean, none of this stuff's new. Now, who's the guy that was bought and sold every railroad there was? What the hell is his name?
Jay Gould?
Jay Gould. So that guy, he could have been the biggest crook we ever had in this country.
And he had lots of friends in Washington.
Oh, God, yeah. But
including the president.
So the Union Pacific, or one of the Central Pacific, one of them got money to lay the track. But then the board said, okay, well, we're not making enough dough on this. So the owner, the chairman and stuff, they ended up saying, okay, we're gonna form another company. It's going to actually put the track down, and we're going to pay them X per mile, which I think was more than the government was paying them, or some story. Well, so the Union Pacific ended up going bankrupt. The other company was making a fortune, so all the guy, the insiders, made more in the other place than if in the Union Pacific went bankrupt, the actual original corporation. That's the same thing that Enron did. They essentially splintered off how many companies. One of the guys I played golf with, his daughter was one of the people they sent out there to be one of the auditors for the whole thing and try and put the whole mess together. She was there, Jan, 2-3 years, and there were like 57 other companies that they were shoving this stuff off into. And you want to find out, really see how dumb the state of California is. They had all these rules about energy, right? And how there were all these price controls on energy. Enron was taking California Energy, somehow saying they took it to Nevada, and then when California had a brownout, they were free to pay any price for spot energy. Right. They were selling them their own energy back at like four times the cost. Hey,
that's the American way.
The American way. Here, I'll sell you your own umbrella back for $10. You just sold me a two. I mean, good Lord. Anyway,
I shouldn't laugh. It's not at all funny.
It's not at all funny. But what do you say we go to break and we come back with? We should have Audrey and talk about some real estate. Talk about these interest rates. They're down a little bit today, but. Right now, they're almost back up to where they were when we did the purchase of the long-term bonds. I don't know. We'll get your opinion on, Jen. I don't think that's a long-term solution. I think these guys are caught in a bind here. I wish there was a solution. S&P futures down 11. NASDAQ futures down 162. Stock market, you know, it's down a little bit today, but it's still pretty much close to all-time highs. We're still fine here. I mean, in the market, just question of if something's going to happen. If not, we'll see. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
You can't handle the truth.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen with Jim Lawler in studio. Matt Byrne on the board. U.S. Trade Rep Greer blames Canada for failed tariff talks. Well, I'm shocked at that. What are the chances of him blaming himself? Zero? Anyway, S&P futures down 15, NASDAQ futures down 190. Does anybody blame themselves about anything anymore, or is that the thing of the past? Dow futures down 36. Individual stocks in the Dow, we've got Home Depot up $2. McDonald's up $2, so that's one of the reasons why the Dow is up a little bit. Dow futures, nothing really crazy. I don't see any massive move anywhere here today, which is unusual. Oh, and Micron's down 33, but it traded, I think, almost 1,000 on Thursday. Now it's back down to 933. That stock is wild. Eurasia, we got the Nikkei down 488.7%. 65,528 is the whole number there. Hang Seng down 492. That's 1.9%. That's a big move. Shanghai down 23.6%. Here we go. S&P futures cut losses as yields decline on CNBC report. Bessent has more firepower for bond buying. Where's he getting the money? Jimmy, you lending it to him? What's the deal there? Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 2, call that flat. FTSE up 1, call that flat. CAC around down 15.2%. So if you're trading in Europe, you're sitting on your hands here today, it looks like. Bonds, again, are going the other way. The 10-year is down 3 base, but it's still 4.71. I think it was maybe 4.8 when he started this thing. And it really, the 30-year has moved some, but the 10-year not so much. So it really hasn't affected mortgage rates. Oil down $1.57. That's good. 85.49, still over 80 by a lot. RBOB 328. I paid 440 this weekend, not happily, by the way. Gold up $33, 47.13. Whatever's going on with this bond buying stuff is really goosed the hell out of gold. So whatever the gold buyers are, they don't like what we're doing to our dollar. Foreign exchange, the pound 116.7. The Japanese yen 158.9. So we're still under the 160 that is their panic point. So they were 163 when we bought all the yen 3-4 weeks ago. Dropped it down to 157. It's come back maybe 40% of the way, but still not in the spot where everybody's worried about it. Crypto up 1,200, 78,574. So since we started doing this with our dollar, crypto's to the moon, and so's gold. So, and so is silver, which is, you know, sort of be expected, I guess. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. By the way, traffic wasn't so good for you or I, was it?
No, it was not. No, it was a bit rough getting in. I was about 10 minutes late than I usually am. But yeah, other than that, let's
I got to see him pulling all the cars and people away from the big crack up there.
What was it? Was it on 90 for you, too?
It was right on Ogden Avenue there.
Ooh, yikes. Well, it's currently 7:36 a.m. on August 24th, 2026. Let's look at weather for Chicago. 59 degrees here in Chicago, a few clouds today with sunny skies later today, and a high of 78. Tonight, mostly clear skies and a low of 59. Over to sports yesterday for Chicago's MLB teams, Cubs won against Mariners 19-2. White Sox won against Mets 2-1. White Sox are 68 wins to 62 losses this season. Cubs are 75-56. Tonight, Sox versus Rangers and Cubs versus Diamondbacks. Over the NFL preseason on Saturday, Bears lost against Bengals 27-9. Bears will be back on Saturday with the Titans. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
The Cubs game was 19-2 yesterday. And I think, James, both teams ended up using position players to pitch, right?
I believe so.
When you got 13 pitchers on your team, why is it? First of all, why not, if you're going to have somebody just lob it in there, why not put a regular pitcher in there and lob it in there? It'd be better at a position player, wouldn't it?
I guess.
You probably wouldn't want his earned run average to say that, but we have Aud?
Yes, you do.
Aud, are you checking all the internets today to find out if our drone pictures are being sold somewhere?
That has not crossed my mind yet, though.
How much are we going to charge if they want to use us?
I hate to tell you, but we're probably not going to be at the top 10 here. I don't know.
Wait a minute. That's actually, the wedding we were at, no, we wouldn't be in the top 500.
No, they were screening that for, like, Most Wanted. I don't know.
I think they were looking to see if either Lawler or Flanagan were there, and they're going to come get them, kick them out. Yeah, so John, we're listening to the ceremony. All of a sudden, I look up, and right over the beach is this drone, and I'm going...
They're feeding lines to everybody.
What the hell?
I had to enlighten Tom that this is the new thing in any type of gathering. You want a complete record of the event, so have a drone photographer come out and record that for you.
You were saying, though, what? You gotta go to be an FAA-registered guy now to run one of these things, especially over other people or over streets?
Oh yeah, I mean it's a big deal. I mean, even for my real estate, all the photographers I use, they have to be licensed, and the rules are very strict, like how far from an airport. Oh, sorry, we have a poodle in here. Hey,
what's with that poodle?
Everybody.
You misbehaved poodle. If you have a big house, and I say, you know, some, I'm not talking about some big mansion, but a regular house with nice yard, nice, you know, I'll say grounds or a big yard. What does a good drone guy charge you to go get all those pictures?
Normally, it's so you can get it as, if I take it as a package or something. It depends, again, how many pictures you want, but maybe on the low end with maybe 5 or 6 shots, depending on who you're using, what you're looking for, maybe 250 to 500.
But if you got some big, huge place where you got the swimming pool and all the other crap and want to do all kinds of real stuff, and what does that run you?
Well, if you're charged mostly by the pictures. You know, okay. Obviously, the more pictures, the more it is. So it's like anything else. But it's, you know, a lot of it's something that does help us sell property more sale, because it gives people a better feel of the area, of the lot size, you know, where it's positioned, that thing. So it's a very helpful tool, I think, especially if people are coming in the area from a different place and don't know the neighborhoods. Like if somebody's looking at a house in LaGrange versus the house in Palos Park, it's two entirely different feels, and this an overview would really help people look for something.
For those that don't know, as a shameless plug, when Aud does one of these things, it looks different than when anybody else does it. The picture people know what they're doing. It looks terrific, and that's all part of the sale, right, Aud? I mean, it's...
Yeah, I have some wonderful photographers that do... I use them all the time. They do a great job. So it is. You know, it's like anything else. It's always worthwhile to pay to have the best done if you're trying to accomplish something.
How many places do you actually... Aud's also a stager. How many other places... How many places do you actually have to stage? Or are most places decent enough where you just take the pictures?
God, I don't think of any. You know, everybody...
I mean, when I say stage...
It might not be a big thing, but it's simple things that will sell a house. Nothing makes me crazier when I look at other real estate pictures that agents that come in will take a picture of an open toilet bowl. It's just...
God.
Nobody really needs to see that. And to me, that's a sign of somebody who just doesn't know
what's,
their
job. What's the difference between... When Aud could do this, but she doesn't normally. What's the difference between like you saying, hey, you know, get half the pictures off the wall, get half the furniture out of here, and make it look decent, how that kind of staging, and some of those shows you make me watch in California where they take everything out of there and get all new furniture and all the other stuff and put all new, they actually have they furnish the whole house for the staging. I mean, have you ever done that, or when do you decide you
I've
have to do
done
that?
I've done it a couple times, but the big difference obviously is money. It costs a lot of money to do that, and so you'll basically... And obviously, there's different stages, but you can spend anywhere from a couple of thousand to $40,000 or $50,000, depending upon, you know, how you're doing this. So it kind of pays most of the time to work with what you have. But to get around that most of the time now, people do what they call virtual staging. And I could ask my, after my photography company comes out and takes pictures, then I say, you know, I want the living room, dining room, master bedroom, and kitchen staged, and I want to do it in a modern style or a traditional style or these colors. And they pull all types of furniture and decorations and will actually complete rooms. And you'll see that all the time on multiple listing services. What we have to say is room is virtually staged. So what we're doing is basically giving people an idea. And a lot of times, if I have a vacant house and I do that, I'll have the picture of the vacant room, and then the next picture will be a picture of the room staged so that people could visualize how they would live in the room. So it's very helpful for clients. Like if you're looking at an empty room, it doesn't give you an idea of, will the couch fit in here? What's the perspective? Is this what I want? But if you drop a virtual living room in there, then people at least have an idea of how they could live in that particular space.
So what happens if you were on like Match.com and you came across a guy like Jan Flanagan and said the picture is virtually staged?
Why are you picking on John this morning?
I'm just saying, I don't even know what that was.
John doesn't need virtual staging. He's a very handsome man. There you go.
Thank you.
I just wonder what I would even think of it.
Boy, John, that's a lot of abuse.
I'm just saying, what if it was me? What if I put, you know, Stocks and Jocks, the pictures of all virtually staged? What does that even mean? God.
What am I going to do with you?
We have all our pictures on the website.
It's called retouch, you know. Virtual staging, retouching, calling what you want. You're making it all look better.
John,
I'm curious, if do you ever encounter buyers who are really well-versed in like a particular, very localized area they're looking for a house? Perhaps because one of the reasons is that they can actually, you know, see everything on a block by using Google Earth. They can trace the steps from, you know, point A to point B to a school or to a church or to a shopping center. So they know the neighborhood with all of its flaws and all of its strengths before they ever set foot in. Are people just sort of, you know, they don't look at adjoining properties very much. They don't think about the bigger picture. All they do is look at the staged photos of the place, and the rest of the neighborhood is kind of more than, you know, way down the list of importance. Or are they very adept and know these areas very well that they're considering buying a house in?
I think you're getting a very good point that, yes, of course, the neighborhood is very important, and, you know, you don't want the house next door to have 14 cars in the driveway and, you know, 6 rusted garbage cans on the front lawn. But people just look at the house.
All right, you got to get a little closer to the mic. We're losing you.
Oh, this is AT&T. I'm in the same place.
All right.
I might lose you. They are, again, going in and out on me in the morning and in the afternoon. People are getting more sophisticated, yes, they will. And a lot of times when I send out information to a client, I send a map of the house with of the area with it so they can get an idea of. And I look at it all the time before I send the house. Is it back up to a railroad track? Is it backing up to a shopping center or a loading dock? What's behind the house? What do you have to think about that? If it's a real big bargain, and I looked at this the other day, it was a house where people called and go, I think I like that. Well, it was backing right up to a loading dock for a big retail store. Now you're probably, that's why the house has been sitting there, you know, priced fast in the market. So it's a good thing to look at. I think people should. People are getting better about it. Mostly, when they first start looking, they just flip through and they look at the house, and if they're familiar with it, they'll probably just come anyway. People, it's more if they're out of the immediate area and they're unfamiliar. They'll either call or, you know, send a message, say, what's this here, or send me a map. Or they will simply Google Earth it themselves. And you can get some pretty close shots there and do this around the area. And our websites have a feature where not only can you look at the picture, but it's called street side pictures. And it will literally take you from in front of the house, and you can go left or right and view all the way down the streets. The houses next to it.
Or when you have a
so
place
kind of a fun thing.
Or when you have a place that has an obvious, I use the term oopsie, like there's a loading dock that you're going to be hearing, it's just a matter of price, or you know, or somebody who says, I don't care, I'm inside anyway, what's the difference?
You know, there's a buyer for everything at a certain price, and some people don't like most people don't want to live by railroad track. Now I'll use one of our trading floor mutual friends.
Yeah, he was a character, that guy. Yeah.
Okay, CTA, that was his acronym, loved trains. He was a train watcher. His idea of a great time on the weekend was to take his lawn chair and a case of beer and go watch the trains go by with a couple of his buddies at a local rail yard. Now, as life would have it, he met a young woman who was also train crazy, and they got married and they bought a house that butts right up to the railroad tracks.
And then they sit out on the back porch and drink beer and watch the trains. They love it.
That's their dream house.
They lived happily ever after.
He was a funny guy. Boy, he had a great sense.
I loved him. If you're out there, Craig, you were always a great guy.
The anybody who got the name CTA, you know, you got that for a reason, right? You liked L trains too. Didn't you used to drive the L
car? Yeah, like an L car if you look right behind.
Yeah. What's going on with the bond market? On is that it really has not affected the 10-year. You know, Bessent's actions in the last few weeks have affected the 30-year a little bit. It was over 5.3, and now it's 5.24. So I mean, not a whole hell of a lot, but I think the 10-year at 4.7, 4.8 is kind of right where it was. So there's no big jolt in the mortgage market, like it's come down a bunch, has it, or anything like that? I mean,
not a bunch, but it has moved down. I think it's actually the lowest it's been right now for, I want to say early spring, maybe. So there's been a little movement here.
Nancy said it was over 7 last week. It's still over 7?
You know what? I have not checked it today. I don't think it is. I think we've got a little relief here.
Okay, I'll check it here. I can find it. But
we can call Nancy and ask her.
What what are you seeing in terms of buyers? I mean, is it still? And you haven't been on for a little bit, but I heard the 21% of mortgages now are new buyers, which is like an all-time low. I mean, you've been telling us that for a while. We didn't need the statistics, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's and you know, it's your houses are a lot of money. Taxes are becoming more and more of an issue for buyers. You know, in many cases, as we've discussed, taxes are as much as the mortgage payment or more. So between the high interest rate, the high taxes, but also what's kind of interesting is a little note come across from one of our feeds saying that rents are at all time.
By the way, you're right. It's under 7. It's 6.6 or something. 6.6 to 6.7.
Yeah. So that's, you know, not where we would all love it to be. I'd love it to be right around 6, 5.5 to 6, but hopefully we'll get there. But it's still, you have to live somewhere. It's still, in many cases, cheaper than rent, and you to go in hoping that you're going to refinance down the road.
Well, go ahead, John. I was going to say, on the way in this morning, they were admitting on BBM that the average residential tax bill this year is going to be up 6% or something. Now that, how does that?
I'd love to know what they're doing with all our money in Illinois, because this
and the bills are coming out September 1. So
they're going to come out right after the election. They do it all the time.
No, they're coming out. They're actually starting to come out now, according to the news. They're going to be out by September 1st, Jen. Right?
Hold on to your hats.
But the commercial rate is flat.
Yeah,
because I mean the businesses aren't doing very well. But I don't know how
they don't want to encourage any more people to flee Illinois.
Right. Well, yeah. I think this is a tipping point. Audrey, are you seeing any signs of increasing short sales or distress sales where people are underwater in their mortgage? Or I don't know, other places in the country?
I would say there's been a little more of that for about the last maybe 6 to 8 months. Not a lot to make a change, but every now and then I'll see one or two floating around. But that also is an indication that maybe something else is going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Are they seriously underwater? Is it just like, you know?
That I can't, unless I actually like pulled it up and looked at the information. But I mean, you've got to be, if you're already in foreclosure short sale, you've got a problem. And the problem, most people don't realize, it's not just missing a mortgage payment, missing two. And if anybody out there is listening and in trouble, call your mortgage company before you miss a payment. Now, they will work with you. They will help you if they can. because it's to their own benefit. They don't want your house. They have enough problems. Right. They will help you. They will delay your payment. They can tack them on to the end. Don't pretend it's not happening, because once it happens and they send you a notice, people don't lose their homes because they missed one, two, three payments. They lose it because the fees for being late and the attorney fees start being tacked on to that monthly balance, and you'll never get ahead of that. So please call if you're having problems. You could get forbearance on your loan. They can work with you. You know, don't pretend the problem doesn't exist. I had a friend that, unfortunately, she got in trouble way back in the recession, and they bank actually helped her out for like 6 months, and she was able to regroup and save her house. But it is something that by the time you see things up for foreclosure and short sale, people are usually so buried in the fees that, you know, that's how you lose your house.
Well, what is the, you know, I guess you guys aren't going to be able to answer this. Well, that's what Jim has done for a while. But what is the difference between talking to them in advance, which you should do, I agree, and all of a sudden, if it looks like you get back together, they can always waive the fees. They just don't.
They don't waive a fee. Are you kidding me?
No. Yeah. They never waive fees.
What planet are you living on?
You know, Audrey is right. You should talk to your mortgage servicer, but you have to be careful with that, Audrey, because the servicer does not own the loan. They only do the...
They're taking your money. They're collecting the paper.
Right. They're collecting the money. The thing that you have to be careful is if they think that you're going to get into trouble, they end up selling the loan, so you get further behind. But you're right. It's the fees and the lawyers' charges is really what is going to drive you out of the house. You know, as an example, we know someone at O'Neill's who lives in Munster. And I told them, I know that Munster is under the FEMA. They should ask for a 90-day forbearance. Your mortgage company is not going to tell you about this. You have to call them.
This lady's place got whacked by a tornado, so she's in.
Right. So I mean, they have to give it to you. They don't want to give it to you. But you also have to, and I told her, you have to understand what that is. And you alluded to it, Odd, in the sense that I'm basically delaying 3 months of payment. Now, where this really becomes a problem is when these people try to pay off their loans. They're like, what's that? And like, out of sight, out of mind, they don't remember I did a 6-month forbearance or I didn't do that. That's really where it gets to be a problem. But in this case, I tell people, call your mortgage company. If you're in the disaster area, get it. Pay something. And then when you can get yourself caught up, get yourself caught up.
How does insurance play into that if the place is a total loss? You still got to keep paying in the meantime?
Well, you do until the insurance company declares that it's a total loss and is going to be paying it off. But as you know, most of them are going to hem and haw and say, well, you know, the tornado did this much damage, but the water, which you're not covered for, did the majority of the damage, so we're not going to cover that.
I'm sure those games are going on. Bud, what's Marie's cousin in Florida? What's it? How long has it been since that huge hurricane? Is it 3 years at least?
Yeah, I think it's been at least 3 years.
And she's still paying the mortgage, and she can't even get into her building. Not even tell her whether they're going to fix it or wreck it. That's unbelievable when you think of it.
At that point, you almost want to go into a foreclosure at that point.
But she's
you
got,
can't, if you can't live in it, what's
but
the use?
But she's got equity. I mean, if she had...
They said it's uninhabitable and they're not allowing people in it.
Yeah. But I mean,
it's like contingent equity. You know, you can't really liquidate
it. Exactly, John. It's contingent. I mean, if you can't live in it, what equity do you really have? Because you can't sell it.
Well, but I'm saying if she just, I mean, I don't know the details. I'm sort of asking that, but if you know, if the place is worth 300 and her mortgage is 50, you can't just walk. Right?
What a mess.
Yeah.
That's a mess, but the answer is yes, you can walk. The question is, do you want to?
Yeah,
take the hit.
Yeah.
But, you know, John is right. It's the equity at this point is contingent, because if no one's allowed to live in, that means no one can sell. Therefore, how do you know you have equity?
Well, one of my actually a good friend, and he's we shared a spot in the OEX forever. Ronnie is his first name. Terrific guy. His parents had a place in the where was the road? It was somewhere down in the Redneck Riviera. You know, they got the what means Belize, you know, on that Mississippi coast or whatever. And it was the Alabama coast. And one of the hurricanes hit. They had the, you know, the beach, a bunch of stuff, the road, parking lot, place. You know, like all the stuff is down there. And their place, Ronnie says to me, it was gone. there was just a slab. It was like a four-story building. And he goes, it was just gone. He says to me, by the way, where's their dresser? Where's their TV? I go, I don't know. It must be out in the swamp someplace. What happens? He goes, it was... What? How long was it? Ronnie said, was it 4 or 5 years later before they settled for 45 cents on the buck from the insurance company? It was some story. The insurance claimed it was the water, and they said it was the wind, and there was nobody there. The whole place was evacuated, so neither side had a witness as to what actually hit the damn place. But it was just gone. They ended up... John?
That teaches a lot of people a lesson about what your insurance covers, and you better check it out.
Yeah, but it was years later, wasn't it? Not. It wasn't like right away. They never got another place down there.
A friend of mine in this last big hurricane in Tampa, it literally was gone too. The whole building is just gone, and they're still sorting through that too.
Well, just a quick stupid story. The one that hit, where all the Irish people are, Jen. When the one 2 years ago,
where all the Irish people are.
They're from Chicago. They all go. Where is it? It's on the east coast of Florida. Where do they all go? You know what place on.
Oh,
your uncle had a place down. Anyway, they know the hurricane's coming. So my buddy Bill, his friend, takes his two cars. He's got like a nice Jeep or something, but he also got like the midlife crisis sports car, and he takes them like 3 or 4 miles inland and rents his garage. Well, the hurricane hits, goes way further inland than everybody thought. He goes out, the garage is gone, so are the cars. Is some alligator living in them in the swamp like 15 miles in? Where the hell are they? They're gone. They never even found them, the garage or the cars.
The junkers went through the swamp, towed all the cars they could find in the middle of the night, cleaned them out, took off the VINs, and sold them out of the country.
You can tell Odd comes from a family that used to own a car company. It has heard all these stories. But so, John, where the hell are the cars, you think? I think they're in the swamp, but maybe Odd's
quite right. Probably some coral reef, yeah.
Yeah. With all the fish swimming through them.
Yeah, it's a...
That's what they did with the SS United States, you know, the passenger liner. They took it down. Is it in Mobile Bay or something?
Yeah.
It's going to become a coral reef.
Well, they do that. They do that with all the subway cars in New York.
Yeah.
It's great fish habitat.
The Divvy bikes here.
Tell me why. I mean, that's. I love looking at that ship. I saw how it was built. Tell me why the government didn't take that, because it was built for those. Long story, but it was built to Navy specs, so it could go like 35 knots or something. Tell me why we didn't make that into a hospital ship, transport ship of some kind. We don't have anything like that.
A hotel, like they did with the Queen Mary.
Well, I mean, something that actually you could use if you have...
You make money on.
Well, I'm talking about the government to use. I mean, transport people.
Know. It was a real, real shame. My grandmother and great-aunt and uncle wrote on that in 1958, coming back from England. And I have all these pictures. You know, it was just one of the most wonderful things I think they ever did. It must have been a blast, you know, travel by ship at a fast, nice, clean thing, you know, not steerage or something.
Well, it takes most of them like 6 days, didn't it? Do it in 4.5.
Yeah, so it still had the record. You know?
So, Odd, where do you think this is? Can you tie together interest rates, these interest and taxes? You wonder. I mean, we talk a lot on the show about, you know, interest rates going up, the market net is going up too. We've got, these companies are kind of overpriced, but at some point, you can't, I mean, look at everybody, anybody knows anybody who's over 65. Last year, the increase in the Social Security was 2.3%, and the increase in the medical part you pay in Social Security was up like 5.5 or 6 or some number. How long can we extend that out? How long can you take the property taxes going up at 3, 4, 5% every year and people's wages going up too before everybody's gagging on everything? I think we're getting close, but I don't, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen next month. But how does that spray out? I mean, Nancy's been on here on record saying question she asks now is not what the interest rate is, but where are you living? What are the taxes? It's like her number one question.
Yeah, they are. It's crazy. Well, you know, people will just vote with their feet. I mean, there's a reason Illinois and these other states are losing residents.
I don't know. The other states aren't exactly shirking at it either. I mean, Indiana's has not charged anybody this gas tax for a few months. Somehow, somewhere they'll make it back, won't they? They need.
Their housing taxes are still far more reasonable than ours are.
That's true.
Far more reasonable. And, you know, the housing price, unfortunately, so many people in Illinois left that all these border towns that have built up subdivisions, the housing prices are, you know, way up. If you got in there a few years ago, you know, you probably at least have doubled your money in many of these places, but the people just would want out.
Do you have any?
Wisconsin, Iowa, you know?
I'm jumping this one in. One of the three of you mavens, but when you talk about property tax in Chicago, we instinctively talk about the city or the burbs, right? Do you have any idea, and is the property tax in a farm or rural Indiana any different than a farm or rural Illinois? Are they equivalent, or is Illinois way more?
I've been looking in small towns for a client. I'm talking from here down through like south of Peoria across there to the Indiana border. A client looking around there in Wilmington, all these taxes are not cheap in these little towns anymore. It's like I'll buy a little, for a little frame house somewhere that's got a little downtown, and I've been shocked at some of the taxes in these areas where you're not saving a whole bunch of money moving out there.
Well, you all have a school, but is Illinois that much more expensive in, say, small town Illinois than small town Indiana?
I don't know, but I would bet you there's a difference, because if there is in the regular taxes, I'm sure there is down in Filter Sound.
Well, I'm certainly not going to debate, but but isn't like everywhere, isn't it like 50-some percent of the bill schools? Are the schools that much cheaper to run in Indiana than here?
I think they should really, really revisit. I mean, I would say almost half of my tax bill is for schools. I would think they need to revisit why your tax bill is half of school when we're graduating children who can't even read and write.
Well, some people think their districts do a nice job, and some districts do.
Right. We have a very wonderful school district out this way.
What's
but I find it hard to believe that they need 50% almost of my tax bill or from everybody to run the school district. They do. I think they need to look at where they could cut some corners. I mean, enrollment is dropping in a lot of schools. We've reached our population.
Well, people,
I would think Indiana, just like Illinois, all these small towns have lost whatever businesses they once had. Some of these, you know, they weren't huge businesses, but they were agricultural companies, they were factories, and they really juiced, you know, the tax revenue for a lot of, you know, townships in that county. And now that's gone. These are like, you know, so the burden's back on the homeowners. I think in all these states, they're all in the same boat in some ways.
Well, we got a dash, guys. We're well over. Odd, give us a shameless plug. How do they find you?
You get outside Chicago, and it's pretty poor. Yeah. Don't realize the little bubble around here, how people struggle inside. You get outside this industrial commercialized area.
Oh, God, yeah. S&P futures up down 12. NASDAQ futures down 179. Good stuff, guys. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456.
Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Advertising has us chasing cars and clothes, working jobs we hate, so we can buy s*** we don't need.